Hi, this is Joe Francica, and welcome to another Directions Media podcast. Over the last week, I am sure that many of you have seen the results of the devastating swarm of tornadoes that touched down in north and central Alabama, killing hundreds of people. This outbreak of tornadic activity is now one of the worst in U.S. history. I live in one of the hardest-hit counties in the state, Madison County, where an EF5 tornado, as well as several other tornadoes, touched down, literally obliterating homes and businesses in their path. Today, I wanted to present an interview with one of the top weather forecasting technologists, Mr. Bob Barron. Mr. Barron is the founder of Barron Services, which has developed some of the most sophisticated weather tracking systems deployed by TV weather stations across the United States. His solutions employ GIS technology, and I wanted to get his insights as to how it fared during this latest outbreak. Mr. Barron was a former TV broadcast weatherman for 18 years and was on the air during the killer tornado that hit Huntsville, Alabama in 1989. That storm changed his life and led him to the founding of his company.
Well, Bob, thanks for taking the time to discuss the outbreak of tornadoes that hit our area last week. You know, the only way we seem to have been keeping in contact with the storms that were hitting all around us was the broadcast media. They seem to do a great job. If you could just briefly go through some of the technology that Barron Services provides as kind of just a backgrounder on what we're seeing and what they're able to provide to us as citizens.
Well, first of all, Joe, I absolutely agree with you. We just sit and watch what everybody else is doing, and I thought that our local stations were just doing an incredible job. I've been in that seat before, back in 1989, and I only had one supercell killer tornado to deal with. These folks had half a dozen or so on the ground, and I was just very impressed with how they were getting that information to the public under some very trying conditions. So I really wanted to start by giving them a big kudo, as well as all of the folks in the area, the man on the street, the outpouring of help to everybody, and all of the officials. I think those morning staff briefings that they provided to the whole community was a basis for everybody coming together and going through some extremely trying times, and it's a real tribute to everything that was set up that we were able to handle a tragedy of this magnitude and still, you know, be on our feet.
I think you kind of touched on is the fact that we're only able to get the information that is provided to us, whether it's broadcast or otherwise, and in fact, when the power went out, those briefings only came to us via radio. So my original question was, these broadcast folks are doing a phenomenal job. It was a historical outbreak in dealing with so many National Weather Service warnings at the same time. Sirens kept going off, it seemed like, every hour in our community. So maybe just run through the technology that the average TV broadcast weatherman is dealing with.
Well, I can talk about what we're contributing to all of that. You know, our company actually got started in the wake of the 89 tornado, and I did particularly a lot of soul searching to see what we did wrong, because we didn't provide the kind of information that you saw this past weekend. And what we learned were a couple of important things to my eye. One was that I thought we had weather tools, and really all we had were weather gadgets back in those days. We had equipment that looked good, and yet it couldn't provide you with any precise information. We couldn't get the proper information out to the public on a timely basis, and so we lost a lot of people that day, and our company really got focused on how we developed weather tools rather than the weather gadgets. The second thing that came out of that 89 tornado was that you have this very limited time frame. In order to be a service, in order to save lives, you've got to define a severe weather event. You have to be able to disseminate that information to those who are in harm's way. And those in harm's way have to respond appropriately. You know, all of that has to happen, and it has to happen within about a 10-minute period. So our philosophy and our focus over the last 20-some years has been to develop technology that can identify a significant weather event, and mostly that's tornadoes or dangerous winds. But there are other, I mean, there are winter events, or there's hurricanes, there's a lot beyond just the tornadic event. But you have to define that event first, and with a high degree of precision and accuracy and timeliness. And then the next step is to define who's going to be at risk, you know, who's involved. And then disseminating that information is really where GIS comes in, because what we found was, at least 20-some years ago, that the information was quite generic. You know, it's in this county. And so instead of people saying, uh-oh, that's me, and responding immediately and going to shelter, typically they either go outside to check for themselves, or they'd switch to somebody else to make sure, you know, to see if they could get further information. And so essentially what we came up with was this storm tracking, where we could identify as rapidly as possible a dangerous event. We could click on that particular cell and draw out a ribbon that would represent its direction and speed and let go. And the computer would kind of take over from there and pull up the communities that would be at risk and the estimated time of storm arrival. And and over time, we were able to get much more sophisticated with the GIS, so that individuals that were watching on television could say with a high degree of certainty, uh-oh, that's me. And we could provide some better information that would get people to respond appropriately in this very limited 10-minute window that you typically have. And you saw that in action this past week, you know, past Wednesday, where if you don't have the information out before the Weather Service issues a warning, you're missing people. They issue the warning when a tornado exists, and the television stations really have to prepare the public for a warning being issued, so that they move when that warning is issued. Our products, Fast Track, for instance, is a 2D product that takes live radar and allows you to do these storm tracks very rapidly and pass them along to pass along the information.
One of the things that came to mind was, and you touched on it, was the accuracy which the weathermen have to predict the track. And we've all seemed to have become very sophisticated at reading Doppler radar as citizens now when we watch the TV. But it's that accuracy, it's that ability to predict and to forecast out in certain distances that allows us to be protected and allows us to get the warning. Is that as good as it can be right now? Because we had so many deaths in the area. I don't know if that was due to the number of storms or just our ability to get the information out, and I wonder if you want to comment on that.
Well, I see us improving our algorithms all the time and improving our ability to show with a high degree of accuracy who's going to be in harm's way. But there's still a lot we need to know in just that area of identifying storms. We recently, within the past couple of years, have moved from just identifying a potentially dangerous storm to identifying storms that are moving into more dangerous conditions, so that we're kind of anticipating whether the storm's going to get worse or not get worse. And that has proven to be a substantial aid in really focusing on the most dangerous of the storms. We call it the Barron Tornado Index. And that's marrying a real-time analysis of a storm with modeled forecast data of what that storm is moving into. And it's been a very powerful tool in identifying the worst of the tornadoes. But the other problem that, and the second problem is making sure that those in harm's way know that they're in harm's way. And I think we've made a lot of progress in that area by reaching out through all of the various means that are available to us to get to the public. Mostly, even in this day and age of social media, when you get the severe weather, the most important item is television. Television is still a number one. So that, of course, is the most important. But there's sending information via cell phone. There's radio broadcast media, which I actually lump in there with just broadcast. That broadcast is the best means that we have, and then these other media. And we're really trying to reach the public in a number of different ways, because as you've seen in just this circumstance, we lose parts of the infrastructure when you have a major event, and so the distribution needs to be in as many different ways as possible.
So do you think we're going to get to the point where the alerts come to us, you know, via cell phone or via social media? Is that something that you can think of that will have better capabilities to get the word out?
That already happens, and I would say, for instance, we have a product called Safety Net, which not only identifies the location-based alert for weather service warning, but it will, on a regular basis, alert you when there's going to be a storm of any kind affecting you. So it's not limited to just a National Weather Service warning, and it has implications for those that are playing out on a, you know, the kids playing on a playground need to get information, even if it's not a severe weather event. If it's lightning, it's going to be dangerous for them.
Right.
And so we're trying to avail ourselves of the various ways of getting information out now. We do a distribution of a data stream via XM satellite radio that is in automobiles, it's in aircraft, in boats, and, you know, this is distributed via satellite in a way that you don't have to have a big dish, you just have a small receiver, and we can get information to you even if landlines go out or cell service is interrupted. You know, it's yet another way of getting critical information out to the public.
Well, maybe just to wrap up, what really happened on April 27th that caused this large outbreak? This really was unprecedented. EF5, of course, the highest on the Enhanced Fujita scale, but we had EF4s and EF3s and EF2s. They seem to be, you know, barraging us from all directions. And whereas Birmingham and certainly Tuscaloosa got hit really, really bad, we here in Madison County just seem to have multiple tornadoes drop down on us. It just seemed to be an unprecedented event.
We were the bullseye. And what causes any of this is instability in the atmosphere. Typically, that's warm, moist air at the surface, dew points in excess of 60 degrees. We had a low-level jet that was streaking right across the Tennessee Valley. So there was a low-level jet stream that was carrying the moist air into the Tennessee Valley, and the center of it was just right on top of us. And then we had a upper-level jet that was bringing in very dry, cold air at elevations from the north, northwest. And so that twisting of the winds with altitude, the warm, moist air at the surface, the dry air at higher elevations, it's the recipe for a really severe outbreak. And the models were all right. I mean, the models were all on it. We were a bullseye for severe weather, and it came. I mean, I would say it was a tribute to the forecast modeling, because we knew for several days in advance that there was a really bad potential for significant weather. And we, for instance, with this Barron Tornado Index, it's a scale of 1 to 10. Well, typically, we get real concerned if the numbers get above 5. And this was the first time since we've introduced this product that our automated algorithms were putting out 10s for some of these storms. All of the meteorological parameters were in place. And it therefore developed the kind of outbreak that we saw in 74. That was where the worst of it was actually up to the north of us in Xenia, Ohio, and so forth. And 89, and I think 85, that first Anderson Hills tornado was part of a group of tornadoes that were developed when the atmospheric conditions were similar to this, but not nearly as great. It was the perfect storm.
Well, Bob, I really appreciate your time. The amount of location technology that's employed these days is rather sophisticated, and it does seem that more and more tools are being put in the hands of citizens to get us warning, albeit in this case, so many deaths occurred. Maybe we saved more lives than possible. Maybe many more would have occurred otherwise.
Well, I actually am very confident that that's the case. We have been privy to some emails, letters, communications from our client television stations, not just here, but also other places in Birmingham, in Chattanooga, and the viewers out there are crediting the television station with accurate representation as having saved lives. And although we still have a lot of answers that we need to get to the question of how we save everybody's life, I'm quite confident that the technology that exists today has saved a substantial number of lives, and that I wish I'd had it back in 1989 when we had that tornado through. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what we're going to have to look at going forward, you've seen the pictures. There are homes where nothing is left but a slab, and they're not survivable. We may have to really be focused on storm sheltering or building homes that have the kind of internal structuring that there's a place to go that somebody can withstand the rigors of an F5 tornado. They're in many cases, folks say that they're not really survivable unless you have a good, you're actually in a shelter.
Okay, thanks, Bob. I really appreciate your time. It's been a really great discussion.
Well, thanks for giving me a shout. I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about this and also an opportunity to salute this community. They have done an incredible job from top to bottom.
Thanks for joining us on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to comment on today's interview, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. As always, thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend about Directions.